You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the name of this program is The Great Leap Forward. My name is John Malkin, and this program is devoted to exploring nonviolence and anarchism. And this program is on every Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also listen to us on the World Wide Web at microradio.net/FRSC. And the phone number here in the studio is 831-427-3772. Tonight I have a very special guest here in the studio, Erica Murphy, who is a women's self-defense instructor. She teaches classes for women, teens, and girls at school, work, and at home. And Erica, I want to welcome you to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thanks, John.
Thanks so much for coming here. And why don't you start by telling me a little about how you first got involved in teaching self-defense.
All right. It's kind of an intense story for me to tell. I was trained as a biologist at UCSC and worked as a botanist down at Fort Ord. They gave a huge chunk of maritime chaparral as a natural reserve to the university. And I was down there surveying for endangered species every day, and we had to survey meter by meter the whole reserve every year. And while I was doing that, a little girl, a 13-year-old girl, was abducted from the residential part of the military base, and her name was Christina Williams. And I just knew from the moment that I saw her poster up that she had been murdered. I just had a horrible intuitive feeling that something bad had happened. And me and my female coworkers didn't do any work that day. We all just sat together and talked all about rape and all our bad experiences in life. And we talked about women's self-defense and what we would do if we saw someone. We were really worried we were going to find her. We were really worried that we would see them actually dumping her body or something. Like, we're in this big wilderness area right next to a military base. So 7 months later, that premonition came true, and I found her body as I was hiking around surveying for plants. And I was just in complete shock, even though I had had this premonition that that was going to happen. So the very next day, my boss suggested that I talk to a therapist because I was in complete shock and trauma. I was just feeling really brokenhearted about it, but I was just like, oh, I'm fine. I felt like everything's perfect, really. So I went and talked to a therapist, and the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I can't believe this happened. I feel like I need to run out and start a self-defense class for girls. And then I regretted saying it because it sounded like a good idea and a lot of hard work. And I already had a career as a biologist. So lucky for me, there's the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women in Santa Cruz that offers free women's self-defense classes. And I was able to just walk in there like the next week and meet a woman who trained me to teach women's self-defense. And now I teach girls ages like 7 and up, and I was able to become a teacher because of that.
And is biology now something that has fallen away from your life completely, or?
Unfortunately, yeah. At first I wanted to have a balance, but like, if I want to be available to do women's self-defense and then I have a really limited schedule for biology, I can't really keep both things going at once. So I don't do biology anymore. I miss it. I wish I could do native plant work still.
This is off the subject a little bit, sort of, but since you're talking about this incident that happened with a girl in Monterey being abducted and killed, and there's this very prominent case right now with a girl that was killed, polyclass.
Yeah.
And someone was talking to me the other evening about it, who felt very strongly that this man who apparently did this should definitely get the death penalty, that there's recidivism in cases of child abduction. And what's your perspective on the possibility of helping someone who is doing these terrible acts and is caught? Or do you feel that, in fact, they should suffer death because of that?
I'm absolutely against the death penalty. I just think that it's a terrible crime that our government gets to kill people who are criminals. And I feel for people who are rapists. Like, it can't be a good place to be to feel like you need to rape and murder girls to get any satisfaction out of life. Like, they must be terribly messed up and feeling really, really horrible about themselves. And most rapists and murderers were abused as children. And so I really think the government should put more money into helping kids not get raped, helping kids not get molested. It seems like a better preventative measure than killing them.
What was the girl's name again who you found?
Christina Williams.
What happened with that case? Was anyone ever found?
No, but I recently heard that they have new information. So the case isn't closed yet. They said that they were, I heard through a friend that they are really close to arresting someone. So there's been no arrests made yet, and there's definitely not a conviction. So.
And how old was she?
13 years old.
Wow. And yeah. Do you teach girls that are that age and younger? Even?
I do, yeah. And some of the girls that I teach remember her. They saw her face all over the news. They went to her memorial. And so it's been a real healing for both the girls and myself to have this class that's really preventing this kind of thing from happening.
So you teach in schools as well as in homes and community centers. What kind of school situations have you been teaching in?
There's an after-school program that got funded by a Safe Schools grant, and they have an academic program and a recreational program. So I get to teach through the recreational program, and it's funded through like a Parks and Rec department in Salinas. So I teach at a bunch of different city schools, public schools, at this after-school program, and I get to take all the girls that want to go. So usually I have a class between 6 girls and up to 20 girls. Yeah, it's really cool.
And girls that are that age, 13 or younger, what are they saying about being afraid or living is it a fearful time for young women in this area?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Most of them are afraid of being stolen out of their homes, being stolen away from school, being kidnapped and stuff like that. And unfortunately, the biggest threat to them is in their homes. Like, most girls who get raped by family members or people that they know, babysitters, brothers, friends, stuff like that. So there is a lot of fear, and some of the fear is unfounded. Some of the fear is because the stories that get reported, the sensationalized stories, are stranger abductions and rapes. So, they are afraid, but they're also really, the younger girls are really hopeful and really powerful too. Like, once they learn to defend themselves, they just have absolute confidence in their techniques and their self-defense, and they really believe in their ability to defend themselves. It's kind of amazing. Whereas older girls who are more, have had more exposure to these stories of girls getting raped and just seeing girls in their lives getting raped and stuff, they are way more fearful and way less ready to believe in themselves. And it's true of older women too. It's like the older they get, the less they believe in their body's strength.
I mean, it seems pretty clear that women are taught that to not believe in their own potential, in strength.
Absolutely.
And in confidence.
Absolutely. It's so true. That's a big part of teaching women self-defense, is making them see that they are capable of defending themselves. We're told over and over again that we need a male for protection. Don't walk by yourself. Don't go out by yourself. Like, and you should feel safe if you're with a man, but that's just such a false sense of security. The man you're with could be your rapist. I mean, and men get raped too and attacked. And recently there was a story where there was 2 teenage girls and one of their boyfriends, and the boyfriend got duct taped to a pole, and the 2 girls got abducted even though they were with a guy. So yeah, over and over again, we're taught not to believe in our own strength. And fashion really works against us, telling us that being smaller is more feminine, and being smaller is more dangerous. Like, you're easier to abduct, you're less likely to have strength and body mass and stuff like that. So, the biggest part of the class isn't even the physical techniques. It's more the mental side of self-defense and really believing in yourself.
When I was thinking about this interview the past few days, I was remembering work that I did to help create a police review board for the city of Santa Cruz. And for a couple of reasons, when we were doing that, we were told that Santa Cruz wasn't the sort of place that needed that type of thing. There's not huge amounts of police abuse, so we don't really need that. And I just on that point, I wonder if people say that Santa Cruz is really nice, pleasant, sweet place to live. We don't really need so much self-defense for women. And the second point, the police role in dealing with abuse or domestic violence. There was a police officer while we were helping to create the board who was accused by 9 different women of having searched them in a sexual way. That officer actually was promoted and got Officer of the Year from the police department after that. And so I wonder those two things. What do people say about Santa Cruz generally? Boy, it seems like a safe place, or maybe not. And the police role and how that's changed or not.
Yeah. God, that's terrible that the guy got promoted after abusing citizens. That's horrible. And unfortunately uncommon, or pretty common. In New York City, they did a new rule to try to reduce the number of cops who were abusers, who had guns and were walking around on the beat. So they took away any cop's gun and badge and put him on a desk job who had to have the police called to his house for a domestic abuse situation. And after a couple months, they had to take the law. They had to repeal the law because there weren't enough cops on the beat anymore. So cops are abusers too. I mean, they can be. They're not immune from it. And although I still don't believe in the death penalty for them, I just think that promoting them is a horrendous action. That's terrible. And Santa Cruz, as far as Santa Cruz being a safe place, depends on where you are. I mean, people's perceptions are often incorrect. There's a similar rate of rape here as other places, especially it being a college and it being heavily wooded and all that stuff. But there is kind of a misconception of it being this really super happy, friendly place. And there's just as many people likely to rape here as anywhere else. So there is that false sense of security. And that can lead people away from, or that can lead people into dangerous situations. But my main message to everyone is trust your instincts. I mean, every person is different and you can't really generalize and say it's a safe place or it's a dangerous place. I mean, people are free to come and go and it's individuals that rape, not a town as a whole. So, I mean, almost every single victim or survivor has said that they had an intuitive feeling about the person before it happened, that they knew that something was about to happen before it did. So I just wish that everyone would listen to their intuition and follow it and see things coming and get away before it happens.
And what about how police treat women who are victims of domestic violence or victims of rape? And even judges in courtroom situations, I know that it was pretty common, maybe it still is common in some places, that judges would say, you were there at that time, what did you expect? Or you were wearing that, you were sort of asking for it. Is that still something that is coped with?
The line of questioning is no longer permitted, thank goodness. Like, they're not allowed to question the survivor's sexual history or what they were wearing or question why they were where they were. But it's still really, really hard to get a rapist convicted. And it's still really traumatic for a victim to undergo the questioning and the process of getting their rapist convicted. I mean, when a woman gets raped and she wants to get the test done to have evidence, the cops often want to be right in the room while the examination is going on. Like, they'll just insist on busting right in, whether they're a male cop or a female cop. And they're just generally really, really insensitive. So most women, I mean, understandably, prefer not to convict their rapist or not to even try to get the exam done. So, yeah, it is really horrible. And domestic violence abuse, there's been progress there too. Like, they now separate the couple. They question both of them. Someone generally has to leave with the cops. So it used to be that they would knock on the door and they'd see this really calm man being like, oh, there's no problem here. Everything's fine. And this hysterical woman who's just been beaten up, freaking out. And they're like tending to believe the abuser because he's all calm and rational. But he just had this huge orgasmic explosion of violence. Like, he's all sedated now. So they're just like, oh, wow, what a rational guy. And here's this freaking woman who's just flipping out. calm down, lady, we're out of here. So unfortunately, that's been how it was up until now, but things have changed for the better in Santa Cruz. And a friend of mine had a couple who was next door to her who was having domestic violence, but it was the woman abusing the man, and they actually were able to talk to the woman and they took her away with them. So, I mean, there is more logic to the process now.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My name is John Malkin, and this program is called The Great Leap Forward. And tonight I'm speaking with Erica Murphy from Dragonfly Women's Self-Defense. And if you have any questions or comments, please do pick up the phone and call us here at 831-427-3772. That's 427-FRSC. You mentioned a woman battering a male spouse. How common is that?
We have no idea, because it's really a shameful thing according to our gender codes in this society. So there's really no statistics on how often men get battered by their spouses. I mean, it's something like 2%, but we're not really sure. It's so underreported. And the same goes for rape of men to boys. So there's a lot of survivors out there who don't come forward because it's like, oh my gosh, now I'm gay, I got raped by a man, or the abuse happens from a young age and they never tell. So we don't even know how many boys and men are rape survivors and domestic abuse survivors. There's just not statistics on that, unfortunately. And there's no self-defense classes for men, really, specifically. I mean, there's general self-defense classes and kickboxing and all the physical stuff, but there's no real specific gender awareness class for men to let them know that reporting it would be the right thing to do and to get support for that kind of thing.
It might be very obvious, the answer to this question, but it just comes to mind now. Why are men not allowed in the class in a co-ed situation?
Good question. I get that question all the time, especially teaching at schools. The boys get really excited when they see me walk in with my blue karate mats, and they just are like, I'm a girl, I want to go to self-defense too. And I have to shut them down. And the reason is that the class was written for women, and it's really specifically geared to women. Women do receive different social conditioning that makes them not believe in their body strength, that makes them believe that they're legitimate victims by seeing themselves portrayed as such over and over again in movies. And the class was written specifically to address women's needs. So I translated it into a class that goes for little girls, but it doesn't cross over for little boys. So men aren't allowed in the class because it doesn't address men's needs. And a women-only space is really important to teach this because it's such a personal topic. I mean, people come to women's self-defense a lot of times as survivors, and it's not comfortable for them to share their stories if there's men present. So it's a safe space. I know that there's a lot of people who get left out when we say a women's self-defense class and men aren't allowed, such as transgendered people and people who don't consider themselves women but are biologically women. So those people, I really feel, need their own self-defense classes. I mean, they need specific classes for them. It's like they're getting excluded unfairly. But we also can't teach just open classes for men and women, because then we'd end up teaching perpetrators the moves that we really would rather keep secret. So that's kind of the dilemma with gender. I mean, you want to discriminate, but you don't want to discriminate.
Do you know of classes for men, not in self-defense so much, but men who are being physically violent with spouses or friends, or maybe court-appointed classes? Is there that sort of thing present in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, there is. I'm unsure of the name, but I know there's a fabulous man who is in charge of it. I just am unaware of his name right now, but I know that that does exist, and I know it's in Monterey County, it's in Santa Cruz County. Unfortunately, those classes aren't attended by men who just want to go and be conscientious men. Like, they are really just court appointed. I haven't heard of any men just voluntarily going to deal with their anger problem before they become rapists, like, unfortunately. And it would be really great if there were a class to teach boys to deal with masculinity in nonviolent ways that was taught in the schools alongside the girls' self-defense.
And we have a phone call, so we will take that. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. I've been listening to your show, and I think it is absolutely great.
Thanks so much.
And I wanted to put a message out on the air, if I could, regarding some of the things that you were talking about of looking at Santa Cruz as not always the happy, shiny face, and talking a little bit about the Citizens Police Review Board. That is a very important part of an oversight committee for this community. And let's see, the Citizens Police Review Board is putting on its agenda, its next agenda, Monday, August 12th, at a meeting at 5:30 at City Council Chambers, some of the issues of public harassment and selective enforcement. And I heard her speaking about one of the officers that had, I guess, did she say, I guess, patted down some of the females in a sexual way?
That's what he had been accused of.
Okay. This particular review board meeting is going to be talking about some of the issues of police harassment and selective enforcement. And also, very importantly, a video journalist, Becky Johnson, is at that time going to be preparing an extensive formal complaint about selective enforcement and police harassment downtown to be sent through the CPRB to the police department. And when this complaint comes up for CPRB review, Becky Johnson is urging the community to lobby for a formal public hearing at which, for the first time, police officers can be asked, and if necessary, subpoenaed, to testify, which is very, very important.
Well, good. Thank you for announcing that and letting people know about that. Are some of the complaints against police officers these days regarding improper sexual searches or complaints about how they're treating women specifically?
You know, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure. But some of the things that are going on downtown, like Cop Watch and Downtown for All, is a group of people that are getting together to talk to people that they felt have been harassed by the police in this community. And we're gathering our own information to bring forward to let the public know what's exactly going on. So that is an excellent question. And if I get more information on that, I will call back your show and let you know.
Well, good. Thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And boy, that was a interesting time. That was probably 1992 or so, 93, when a couple of women came forward complaining that the same police officer here in Santa Cruz had searched them in a hotel room for illegal drugs and had searched them in a really improper way, reaching up their shirts. And then this was on the news. It was very prominent in the news, front page of the Sentinel. It was on the TV. And many more women came forward, and it was the same officer even, and a total of 9 people, all of those independent except for 2 of them that were in the same situation, came forward. And eventually, investigations were done into this, and the police department and the district attorney and another investigation was done. And they all said that the women had made up these stories.
Oh, my gosh.
And even that the group that I was working with to create the police review board had told them these stories and said, tell these stories so we can make the police look bad. That officer, like I mentioned, was promoted, became Officer of the Year. He's still on the Santa Cruz Police Force. So it's even, and this is what some of those women said, these are the people I go to when I've had something difficult happen to me, and they're the ones doing it to me.
Yeah, which is just a perfect illustration of why we need self-defense. Like, we can't always just call on the cops to come help us. Like, they're not always on our side as women survivors of rape. And we really do need to be able to defend ourselves, like for ourselves. So that's really typical of victim blaming, to be saying that, oh, here's these people, these women, well, you know, they probably deserved it. They were criminals. They had drugs on them. They did, what do they expect? The cops, of course, going to feel them up. I mean, who are they to expect good treatment? These sluts, you know? So that is typical victim blaming, to look at the person who is coming forward and saying, I've been raped, or I've been molested, or I've been treated badly, and asking them what's wrong with them and why they were there and what they were doing there. And it's over and over again. It's a way to shift the focus off the rapist and off the crime, and not to ask, why is he raping? Why is he molesting? Why is he abusing his power? Instead of facing the fact that there is this abuse going on, instead of facing the fact that this is a dangerous world that we live in, it makes us all feel a lot safer to think, well, those are isolated incidents and those girls were loose sluts wearing tight clothes, and could you blame them? You know, so it's a way of people to stay in denial about the truth of the matters.
Do you think overall that things are more positive, that more women are feeling more confident, and that maybe in the United States as a whole, things are getting better for women generally, or not so?
I think in certain communities things are getting better, but as on a whole, no. I mean, there's still, I mean, domestic violence and date rape is still the number one reason for women to be in the emergency room. So even though stranger rapes, the numbers reported go up and down, and right now they're on the rise, domestic violence and abuse by partners is still a huge killer of women. And I don't think that a lot of women feel safe in their own homes. So, but again, when we think of self-defense, we often think of strangers. We often think of dark places and dark alleys, and that's just not where most of this happens.
I don't know if this is too big, but why do you think this is? I mean, this is a serious, serious problem that's been going on for a long time. And I know that it's generally people who say, I love you, to each other that are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think this is happening?
Can I answer the big question with big words?
Use big words.
Got two words for you: misogyny and patriarchy. So I think that in intimate relationships, our gender roles come into play so much that the man or the abuser generally feels like they have complete ownership over the woman or the victim. So they feel completely entitled to control them in whatever means necessary, because they really do consider them their property. They really do consider that they have absolute rights to tell them what to do, and if they don't listen, to enforce this kind of physical discipline on them. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of portrayal and thought about women as victims. I mean, we see it over and over again that in the movies, of women being raped and women being killed and women being beaten. And it's like, it kind of settles in that, wow, they are legitimate victims. And what are they really going to do about it anyways? Who's really going to stop me? And then again, violence is portrayed over and over again as being this righteous, strong way to act. Even in innocent kid movies like Star Wars, it's all about males being righteous and strong through violence. And the, what is it, the Hobbit one or the Fellowship of the Ring? It's like this kid movie, but again, all these males are setting the world right with violence. And so we really get this message that if something's wrong, we can correct it by hitting someone. So I think that's some of the reasons why this is going on.
There, we've already even passed through a time period where people have said feminism is complete. Mm-hmm. And we're finished. Mm-hmm. And isn't it great that everyone's mm-hmm. equal? And even beyond that, that now, or 10 years ago, Susan Faludi in Backlash, there's even a backlash about that idea.
Yeah.
Where are we at in
well,
this?
There's no equality while there's rape. Like, we almost live in two separate worlds. Women are constantly reminded of the threat of rape. Even women who have never been raped, their lives are still totally shaped by rape. The things that they choose to do and the things that they won't allow themselves to do are governed by the threat of rape. Like, I wouldn't walk outside and go down to the beach at night because I could be raped. I mean, a lot of women won't do things that they otherwise would do because of that threat. And that's just not true for men. Men have so much more freedom in the world because of rape. I mean, it's a rape culture. We really have a culture of rape. It's a way of social control. It's a way of enforcing misogyny and enforcing patriarchy. So I really don't think there is any equality between men and women while rape exists.
Erica, tell me more about the classes that you teach, what happens in a class, and I imagine that some of it's physical, some of it's not, and I don't know if you can give a few simple ideas that would help women that are listening to this.
All right, yeah. Well, the physical part of it's all based on karate, and almost no one ever gets to the point of having to use the karate that I teach them because the other stuff that I teach is so effective and powerful. Like, you just see it coming and you're able to set boundaries. So a lot of the class is learning how to be direct and assertive with people and to stand up for yourself verbally with people. Most women really don't set boundaries firmly in life because it's seen as being rude. It's seen as being unladylike. It doesn't win you any approval, and most women are so conditioned to be approval addicts that it scares them when someone says something they don't agree with because they're not going to vocalize it. They're just going to go along with it and sit there and be all conflicted in their head. So a lot of the class is breaking that habit and teaching women how to be direct and assertive, how to deal with conflict, how to listen to their bodies and their intuition and really believe in their ability to keep themselves safe. So, in a normal class, we'll usually cover, a big chunk of it will be physical and another big chunk of it will be doing role plays and going over the rules of direct communication and assertiveness and going over the rules for de-escalating a conflicted situation, and role playing that. And I'll often be the attacker and attack them and make them in an uncomfortable, scary situation so that they are put under pressure to use their words and use their skills that I've taught them. So at first it seems kind of hokey, like, well, I'm just this woman attacking this other woman. How scary can it really be? But when we set the stage and we set these situations, we all have really great imaginations and we really do go there in our heads. So it can be really intense and scary. And it makes your body freak out and your adrenaline rise. And that's exactly the conditions that a woman would be feeling when she's attacked. So you get practice feeling afraid and then responding with assertiveness and powerful language and powerful body language and physical self-defense.
Can you describe, is there anything that you can think of now that you could convey over the air to women that they might be able to use? I don't know, some vocal technique or something.
I think that the simplest thing to communicate to women right now without them being able to see me, besides what I already said about believing in your intuition, if you get a bad feeling about someone, it's not just out of the blue. Don't question yourself. There's nothing wrong with you. You're having that feeling for a very good reason. There's probably some physical piece of information that leaked in through your senses that your conscious mind isn't allowing you to process. You're busy thinking about your dinner. You're busy thinking about your life. And so oftentimes we doubt ourselves when we're feeling creeped out about someone and later regret that. So don't wait for proof that someone's a creep. Trust your body. Trust your instincts. If you're having a bad feeling about someone, there's a very good reason why. And the other thing is, as far as stranger attacks go, most stranger attacks, the person is sizing another person up and looking for a really good victim. They're looking for someone, easy to attack. So when women are walking around in public and walking down the street, it's really important to maintain eye contact with people, to hold themselves up and walk confidently.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and my guest this evening is Erica Murphy, women's self-defense instructor with Dragonfly Self-Defense. And we have a phone call, so I will pick that up and see who that might be. You are on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Welcome. Hello? Got cut off. Call back if you have a question or comment. Please call back 427-3776. 972. It's in the 831 area code. We're also on the World Wide Web at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Erica, tell me about the house classes that you do.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been really fun so far. The first couple classes I taught were this way, and I've gotten a few more since then. But we'll do them like a Tupperware party, where a group of friends will get together at someone's house, and we'll kick out all the boys, and they'll go have boys' night out or something, which actually has turned out to be really fun for them. And they get time to go out drinking or going to the movies or doing whatever they want to do. And then we get the house to ourselves to do self-defense. And we usually do it for 8 to 10 weeks, or anywhere between 4 and 10 weeks, really. Meet once a week for 3 hours. And it's been really fun, because then you get to learn in this really safe space, one of your friends' houses, with a group of friends. And people are so much more open that way. Like, they're willing to share their personal experiences. And that makes the class so much more rich. So that's been a really fun way to teach it.
And you teach in schools too. Are there schools that do this regularly as part of their program?
Unfortunately, there isn't. I thought that schools would be so interested in having this as part of their PE curriculum or part of their sex ed curriculum. And right when I finished my training, I just went down through the phone book and called every single school in Santa Cruz and got a big fat no from all of them. I was really shocked. So they really weren't interested in having it as part of the curriculum. And I hope to change that. Like, my real dream in life is to have it in all the schools. I mean, we teach them dumb stuff like volleyball and frisbee. And, you know, they teach them all kinds of dumb stuff at school, and it's mandatory and they have to learn it. So why not teach them something that could save their lives? I mean, it's just ridiculous, the amount of stupid stuff that gets taught at school sometimes. And there's no room in the curriculum for a life-saving thing like girl self-defense.
Did they say they weren't interested because of funding, or because they, what reasons were given from schools?
You know, I didn't get a lot of reasons. Sometimes it was just a flat no. In fact, one guy even yelled at me. I think it was the vice principal in Scotts Valley High School or something. Like, I said, would your girls be interested in having self-defense at their school? And he yelled in the phone, "No, they most certainly would not." And I thought, wow, have you asked them? Like, you sound like a scary enough guy that they might want it at school. So I don't know. I think funding probably, I mean, that would be the obvious issue. But I think also there's fear about the uncertainty of, well, wow, what are these empowered girls going to be like to have on campus? Are they going to go around getting the principals in trouble? Are they going to go around getting the boys in trouble? Like, it's kind of a don't rock the boat thing, I think. And it's true. I mean, while I've never, ever had, I've taught it for over 12 months now straight at the after school program, and I've never had a kid abuse their self-defense and use it inappropriately. But I have had girls report abuse, and students have been expelled for harassing the girls sexually. So it's really effective. I mean, whereas when I was in school, I was just really prone to just taking all kinds of abuse and just thinking that that was part of being a girl at school. You just got your butt grabbed. You got your bra snapped. You had boys catcall at you on the campus. And I just thought that was part of growing up, and you just had to put up with it. So it feels really good to me to tell the girls, no, there's a law against this. This is called sexual harassment. You can report this. So unfortunately, the girl who did report it was at a school where the principal didn't feel like enforcing the rules about sexual harassment, and he almost let it go unpunished until a teacher who was the head of the after school program and was letting me use her classroom came forward and showed him the school code that said a minimum of 5-day suspension is required, and made him suspend the guy for 5 days. So I really feel like there's a big reluctance towards empowering girls. Like, people are kind of scared of that. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see it happen. I would love to see it be like a statewide mandatory thing that girls have to have this, because it's an epidemic. So many girls, like 1 in 4 girls gets raped before she's, or between the ages of like 15 and 25. And so it's just a huge amount of women that get, and those are the ones that are reported. It's the most underreported crime. It's something like, they estimate 1 in 10 rapes is reported. And like I said, I don't know a single woman who isn't affected by rape. Even girls in junior high school say to me, God, I wish I would have had this class when I was younger. You know, so it starts really young when girls start experiencing harassment and rape.
Do you know of classes, ongoing classes that are available now, or contact information to find out about that?
Sure. They can always call me. My number is 421-9482. And I will teach at office places and at homes, churches, schools, any place where there is a room to use. And there's also free classes at the Loudon Nelson Center through the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. And you can get information about that at the Loudon Nelson Center. And there's often flyers hung up at Bookshop Santa Cruz and all over town. And those classes, they're all different lengths. You can get a one-day workshop or a 10-week class or an 8-week class. And it's just a really great resource. Even if you are not within the city limits, you can still attend the classes, but it does cost.
That's great resources. And thank you for the work that you do with women and girls. It sounds really empowering and helpful. Thanks, Erica. Thank you very much for being here this evening with me.
Thank you, John.